afternoon, and welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. Big Talk 850 WFTL. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again today, as we are each Sunday at noon, with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates PA, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. Our listeners know we are here each week to answer all of your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from one minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your questions. So give us a call right here in our studio at 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you may do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking on the email the show tab.
And of course, even if you don't want to send us an email, you should still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, where you can automatically link to our Facebook page. You can automatically link to our brand new HOA and condo blog. Again, that's www.hoa-condoblog.com. And we really have gotten a tremendous amount of participation, and we really appreciate it. This past week, the topic was CAMs coming under attack again, and this time it's by some lawyers. Lots of comments by so many of you. And of course, you can also join our email list and get copies of our newsletters and other announcements about the show that we send out each week. And of course, if you'd like to call our law firm directly and pick our brains off the air, you can call Glazer & Associates at 855, the number 4, Condo Craze. Again, 855, the number 4, Condo Craze. And the law firm's website is at www.condo-laws.com. Again, that's condo-laws.com. And before we get going today, some exciting news. As our listeners know, the Community Association Members Party was established to help get legislation passed that would help all of you living in community associations throughout the state of Florida, and to know exactly what legislation each of you believe should be the top priority. There's now a survey on that website that allows you to specifically tell us what legislation you guys deem to be the most important. So please go to www.camp2012.net. Again, that's camp2012.net, and click on the survey button. And we really intend on getting a lot of responses from thousands of you around the state. And when the survey is completed, rest assured that the results are going to be given to the Florida legislature. And again, that's camp2012.net, and click on the survey button. Please participate in this real important survey. We need your help and we need your participation. All right, some more housekeeping before we get going. Remember, Florida law now provides that members of a condo board, you have to get certified within 90 days of getting elected to the board. In fact, you can even get certified 1 year before getting elected to the board. And one way of getting certified is by taking the Condo Craze Board Member Certification Course. This is the first course that was written by an attorney and that was approved by the Florida DBPR.
And that was written by you, my friend. And yep. Eric has now certified over 2,500 Floridians who are now eligible to serve on a Florida condominium board of directors. The course is fun. The course is free. There's food served, and you can get to ask questions, and you leave with a summary of everything you learned.
And check this out, everybody. If you can't make it down to Hollywood or up to Jacksonville or any of the places that Eric goes around the state to teach this course, sometimes we can come out to your condo, or you can come to our office. If you give us a call at Glazer & Associates at 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE, we can possibly make arrangements to bring the course to you.
And, of course, if you'd like to register for the next seminar at the PM Expo event, this time in Orlando, it's actually coming up on August 15th. Just go to the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, fill out the form, and Brian, our office manager, will get back to you that you are, in fact, confirmed.
And welcome back from a well-deserved week off. How was California?
Thanks, Karen. California really is simply my favorite state in the country. We had a great time. The weather alone makes it great.
Yeah.
Zero humidity out there. It's fantastic. And we even toured the state from San Francisco to Tijuana, Mexico. And, of course, I did it with my wife, my kids, and both grandmas, which means my mother-in-law was on the trip. And for those of you who really missed that quality time with your family and you really want to experience a true, peaceful, and relaxing vacation, just really reset your clock, book a cruise to Hawaii, because what I did was insane. You put me in the car again with that same people for 10 days, and I'll tell you, I'll flip out. But no, truth is, we had a great time with the family and kids. I know they're listening. So, kids, I love you. Daddy's only kidding. We had a great time and would love to do it all over again with them, believe me.
That was awesome.
Well-deserved time off.
Good for you. Well, last show was really all about the emotional support animal debate and how the tide may be turning in favor of the associations who seek to keep their community pet-free, despite the claims by certain people that they need their pet for emotional support. And if you ever want to stir up a hornet's nest, talking about whether or not associations should be able to prohibit a pet is definitely the place to start.
Yeah, you're correct, Karen. And before we move on to the real topic of the day and introduce our esteemed panel, let's just briefly tell the listeners how some of our blog readers felt about the two recent court cases that we spoke about last time on the show, where the association won and the association was allowed to prevent an owner from having an emotional support animal. Scott, starts off.
Yeah, Eric, before I read this first letter, I just want to say that everybody needs to know that nobody's actually against people with legitimate illnesses
Absolutely.
Getting the help and support they need. And if their doctor prescribes an animal, more power to it if it's absolutely necessary. We're just frustrated with people fraudulently saying they need things that they don't really need
Exactly.
and basically making it harder for the actual people with illnesses that need the help and the support of animals sometimes. But we got a letter from Miss Vivian Musico, and she writes in and says, "Thank you for bringing this to our attention. I'm an animal lover, but totally agree that if an association's bylaws say no pets, that should be obeyed. Read the docs before moving in and have concern for others who may have allergies."
Yes, and Joseph Ferretti writes in and says that, quote, "If pet owners know in advance that pets are not allowed in the condo, they should not have bought it."
Pat Sciarla writes in and says that dogs should definitely not be allowed in 55 and over communities because they're difficult to care for, especially for older people.
All right, then. Well, Michael Katz writes in, and he says that he is in favor of well-behaved pets living in the community, but there are too many doctor's notes out there that are mostly hypocritical, alluding to invisible disabilities, whatever that means.
And Don writes in and says, "Section 10 of the Florida Constitution establishes the primacy of contracts. Declarations and covenant restrictions are, in fact, contracts. It's ironic that people can claim they need a pet for medical and emotional reasons when that is the precise reason why everyone else chose specifically to live in a no-pet community. People who purchased here and made an investment have a right to a home environment free of allergens and anxieties. The logic is tortured. The irony is delicious. This gives the lie to the concept of common interest living."
Hey, Don, you know I love you, man, but unfortunately, the powers of the U.S. Congress do supersede sometimes the contractual rights of Florida homeowners.
All right, well, like we said, the bottom line is the debate's going to continue for quite some time, but there's no question in my mind, at least, that the decision we spoke about on the last show that came out of the 4th District Court of Appeal, that's definitely going to make it a little tougher for people who claim the right to have a pet based upon an emotional need. All right, but before we go to the break, let's move on quickly to the topic of the day. And as we blogged about this past week, community association managers come under attack again. If everybody remembers, about 2 years ago when the Florida legislature was considering whether or not to deregulate the community association manager profession. Well, at that time, licensed managers dodged a bullet and really breathed a sigh of relief when that legislation eventually died. And for the time being, community association managers were at least off the radar. But now, the Real Property Probate and Trust Law section of the Florida Bar has sent a letter to the Florida Bar's Standing Committee on the Unauthorized Practice of Law, seeking to have the bar classify many of the things that licensed managers routinely do to be considered the practice of law. And if this committee gets their wish, I, for one, can't see the need any longer to have any CAMs become licensed or the ability to have associations operate without asking an attorney to do virtually every little thing for them. It's really crazy. And to help us discuss the dire straits that CAMs can be facing, we invited some of them on the show today. And let's start with Darlis Walker, owner of Condominium Concepts Management Company. Welcome, Darlis.
Thank you, Eric. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. And again, we have Raphael Aquino from Affinity Management Services. Welcome back, Raphael.
Thank you for having me, Eric.
And we also have Reagan Marak and Bruce Mazur from KW Property Management. Welcome, gentlemen.
Full house.
Full house. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks, Eric.
All right. As you know, in our blog this week, I made no bones about the fact that I was vehemently against the position that the Real Property Probate and Trust section of the Florida Bar has taken. And I think it's totally wrong of them to seek to classify the activities that all of you do day in and day out as the practice of law, and therefore really being licensed, requiring a license as a Florida attorney. Now, I have to tell you, though, I expected really all of the people on the blog to write in and kind of agree with me. And to a large extent, though, I was somewhat surprised and I was wrong. And it seems that the only profession that condo and HOA owners might trust less than the association's lawyer, well, that may be the management company. And I got to ask you, how come you guys believe that's so? Who wants to start us off? Darlis, you want to start us off on that?
Absolutely. I think that over the years, what we have seen is a lot of the larger management companies purchase up smaller management companies, and they really just look at their bottom line dollar as opposed to the customer service. They're making decisions for boards on what contractors to use, what services, what staffing, what their fees should be, rather than really working with the board and meeting the board's agenda. You know, as CAMs, our job and our responsibility is to advise our board and give them options and to guide them, not to make the decisions for them. And with these companies out there, especially the larger companies, making decisions and that the boards don't agree with, I think the boards have just seen their fees go up and they feel that they have no control. Time and time again, we hear that the management companies are making the decisions, and that's not clearly not how it's designed.
Very interesting, because I've discussed this on the show before, and I can tell you oftentimes I find this much more prevalent in northern Florida than it is perhaps in southern Florida, where if I give a seminar in northern Florida, a lot of times people in the audience will stand up and start telling me about how their management company made them do this or that or made them sign a contract with a specific vendor, and I don't find that nearly as much as the case down here in South Florida. Bruce, Raphael, how do you feel about that? Is that the reason why a lot of persons who live in associations feel that they can't trust the manager because the management company may have a little too much influence in the community?
Well, Eric, I tend to be reluctant to say that I really disagree with Darla's answer there. Us, KW, being a larger company out there, we have never acquired another company. We also have some core values and beliefs that we believe that it's important to advise the board and stress that to our managers and to make sure that all of our boards know that we have no relationships with any of our vendors and so forth, and give them concrete answers and give them good direction so that they can make good decisions for their association.
Eric, let me just balance out Bruce over here. I see what Darlis is saying in the sense that, you know, as some of the larger companies that have financial relationships with the vendors that are being chosen, that sometimes is a major conflict of interest. And I see where a lot of board members get frustrated with that. And also the acquisition of smaller firms, changing the philosophies, it can be tough. So I see what she's saying.
Yeah, and also one point that we forgot to mention is, unfortunately, we can't please every single individual in the association. As a managing company, what we need to do is just give them the proper direction and understand that we're doing our job responsibly. And the members that do understand what's going on in the community, they'll know we're doing the right job.
All right. Well, let's do this, guys. It's time to take our first break. And when we get back, we're going to discuss the specific things that the Real Property Probate and Trust section wants classified as the practice of law. We'll get our guests' opinions on the subject. And, of course, we'll take your calls and questions. Give us a call here in the studio, 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, sorry about that, Karen. Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs right here on Big Talk WFTL 850. We're here with KW Property Management's Bruce and Regan, as well as Raphael from Affinity Property Management. And on the phone with Eric is Darlis from Condominium Concepts. We're talking about condominium management regulation here in Eric, why don't you get us started again?
And how CAMs are now under attack by a committee of the Florida Bar. And guys, let's get right to the heart of the matter. Now, this committee says that they're concerned that community association managers are engaged in the practice of law, believe it or not, when determining what someone owes to the association in delinquent assessments. Now, you know, I can certainly read the statutes. Aren't you guys required by statute to keep that as an official record? Chime in.
You know, Eric, this is really troublesome. Our company, KW, one of our core values is accounting. We boast of having over seven CPAs on our staff. And you would think that we would be capable of really understanding ledgers here. Nothing against attorneys, but, you know, CPA, attorney, let's be real here in that sense. I would think that we're very, very capable of handling a ledger here.
Well, again,
and I would have to agree with that statement. For the most part, an attorney is not going to be able to look at the ledger, reconcile it, and ensure that the numbers are accurate. I think that's a ludicrous action for them to take, to think that they can do it better than a CAM or than a CPA.
Yeah, let's just say how it is. I think these guys are looking for an increase. Sorry, Eric, but the reality is the reality. Let us do what we know how to do, and you guys do what you know how to do.
I just want to defend attorneys here for a second. Just because we have an advanced degree in the law doesn't mean we didn't take math as well.
That's right. I can add. I agree.
Yeah, I don't want to do any more math, and I'd be happy to let y'all do it.
Let's talk about why they believe it's the practice of law, because in order to figure out exactly what a particular person in a condo owes, you got to be able to look at the declaration, and you got to be able to figure out whether or not you're allowed to charge for late fees, and and what that interest rate is that you're specifically allowed to charge. Now, quite frankly, I don't see the big deal in why it's the practice of law for a manager to be able to open up your set of your declaration of condominium, your declaration of covenants, and figure out what that interest rate is. It's not rocket science.
You know, one of the things we do, Eric, is we partner with our attorneys. What we do is we allow the majority of our attorneys to have access to our system to be able to partner in those things with us, so that they at any given moment can look into anyone's ledger that they're representing from that end, or they're dealing with from a delinquent matter. So that ability is there, you know, for both of us to be able to act together for the association.
Right. But again, I don't think that's the practice of law to go open up your book like any unit owner would and figure out what you're allowed to charge as the interest rate. I mean, quite frankly, that's a little silly. And Ralph Rocco, I'm sure, is listening to the show, and I'm sure he'll take the position. He's an attorney with our office that is the supervisor of the collection department. And I'm sure, though, he'll tell you that once a file, though, is already with the lawyer, that CAM should probably get the figures from the lawyer first before telling a unit owner what he or she needs to pay in order to get out of trouble.
Correct.
Anybody disagree with that?
No, not at all.
No, not at all.
No, once it's in the attorney's hands, we believe that too, that the attorney has, he's the lead person at this time.
Right. Okay, but before that.
Or she.
Or good she. Point, Regan. You can go home now without a problem.
Exactly. My wife trains me well.
You're right. All right. Now, ironically, last week, a local law firm was actually sued in a class action case for allegedly deliberately overcharging the allowable rate of interest that they were allowed to charge. So I got to tell you, I fail to see how lawyers do a better job than CAMs in this regard. Both professions are certainly capable of opening up a book and figuring out, again, what the interest rate is and whether or not you're allowed to charge a late fee or not. But moving on, all right, the committee would also consider the drafting of pre-arbitration demand letters the practice of law. Really, I also think this is hysterical. So now a CAM wouldn't be able to send a letter, let's say, to the guy who plays the music too loud each night and threatening that guy with an arbitration action. And why this would require a law license, I quite frankly have no idea. All that statute says in plain English is that you have to write a letter basically threatening arbitration and giving the defendant a reasonable opportunity to comply and shut the music off. Why does that require some sort of a law license? Raphael?
Eric, I mean, I think that's pretty ridiculous. At Affinity, we manage a ton of mid-sized of associations, and that would be pretty much putting most of these owners in a huge corner because of the costs that it would come to having. I mean, what it's pretty much going to mean is you have to have an attorney on site to do everything that this letter is stating. And most of my associations wouldn't be able to afford anything even nearly as close to that.
You know, Eric, most of these letters are form letters as well. So, you know, most associations before or once they get started, they get the advice of their attorney to make sure that all the wording is correct there. So it boggles me to have to contact an attorney to ask him to spend 15 minutes. And no, you know, due respect, guys, it is a lot of money everywhere. So we're talking about, especially today with associations looking to try to save money, what's the best interest of the association here?
Darlis, what's your take? You're smart enough to write a letter saying turn the music off or you're going to arbitration?
You know, I think I am, and I think that I would agree with the other two gentlemen that, you know, we have form letters. The form letters have been reviewed by legal counsel, and clearly we can put in someone's name, and if it's been pre-approved, there's no reason to have to spend the legal fees to have an attorney draft that letter.
Also, I'd like to add, if condominium association manager petitions the arbitration section to be a qualified individual, they can actually represent the condo in the arbitration action. So it's not really necessary to have an attorney involved.
Right. And again, I know Jan Bergman had this on his blog this week, exactly the point some of you are making. Why can't an attorney draft some kind of a form letter that the community association manager would be able to use, you know, time and time again every time that someone commits a violation? Why don't we do this? It's about that time to take our end of the half hour first break. When we get back, again, we'd love to take your calls for our guests, 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585, and we will be back right after this.
Welcome back to the second half hour of Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. Taking your phone calls about CAMs today, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We have a full studio here, and on the phone we have Darlis Walker, owner of Condominium Concepts Management Company. Also in the studio, Mr. Sexy Raphael Aquino from Affinity Management Services. And finally, we have Regan Rock from KW Property Management and Bruce Mejia, Senior District Manager from the same.
All right, we're talking about CAMs being under attack by the Real Property Probate and Trust Section of the Florida Bar. And gentlemen and ladies, the committee also thinks it's the practice of law for a CAM, check this out, to determine the number of days required to provide notice for a meeting. Now, don't be insulted by the question, but I'm certainly assuming each of you are smart enough to know how long 48 hours actually is, right? You kind of have that concept down, what 48 hours means?
Yeah, I would think we do. You know, the condo docs are very clear, as is the state statute. So,
and
yes,
my watch.
I think we, and your watch. That's and the calendar, correct.
It's really hard to believe, but we do know there's only, you know, there's some exceptions to that rule when you're passing a special assessment or rules regarding unit use. But other than that, it's 48 hours. Why is that considered the practice of law for you to advise your association clientele that you need to post notice of a meeting with 48 hours notice? Somebody help me on it.
I don't know. It's just such a ridiculous question that I don't know pretty much how to answer it.
I just listening to all Eric, you know, you're obviously much more involved and know a lot more about this than we do. But I just don't understand why so much attention is put in specific places where, you know, it could be put in other places. For instance, CAM managers taking kickbacks. I mean, I would go as far to say...
Hold on. Does that happen?
It's probably happening right now. But, you know, even if
it doesn't happen on any of our companies.
Well, no. And I'll go as far to say, and, you know, when it happens and it you can't deter it, if it's happening in our company, we go after our employees. That's something
correct.
That I would say they should be focusing on. I don't understand why this is happening.
Okay, so I guess the position here is why is the focus being put on something that there really isn't a problem about, and maybe what should be focused on is things like kickbacks. And I can tell you there's a thought out there in the community that when complaints are put in, and I'll say this not just about CAMS but about lawyers too, but oftentimes when you actually catch someone doing a bad act and you go through the hassle and you go through the trouble of reporting them to the DBPR or the Florida Bar or whatever it may be, it takes a year and a day to actually get a response to that. And perhaps, Regan, that's where what you're trying to say. Perhaps that's where the emphasis should be. If you have a CAM that's actually doing bad things, maybe the focus should be on getting them out of the profession as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I think the focus should be, instead of the type of profession, CPA, lawyer, I think it should be the person or the company instead of, you know, the way it's going after us, the way it's being done. Exactly.
Gotcha. All right. Some of the other things that may be considered the practice of law, if the Florida Bar decides so, is determining how many votes you need to pass an amendment to your governing documents. Now, again, not rocket science. There's a section in every declaration that says this is the percentage of votes that you need to pass an amendment to your declaration. Someone tell me why that would be considered the practice of law to advise your client what your declaration says.
You know, Eric.
You know, Eric, I think that I was pretty clear in my blog on Wednesday.
Oh, you were very clear. We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, my feeling on this whole issue. It appears to me that these attorneys are going after administrative issues because they see it as an easy way to increase their billable hours, while they're claiming that is, in fact, is not what they're looking to do. I don't think that they want to have to take on work that is going to be take a lot of effort. So they're looking for something that's easy money, and I just think it's ridiculous.
Bruce,
you know, that was well stated. You know, any good manager. Any manager and company that puts a manager in place, the very, very first thing is to read the docs of the organization. And those are very, very specific items that every camp should know if they're managing an association. That's a guaranteed from
right.
that end. So I totally agree with Darla, what she mentioned.
Raphael?
Well, at Condominium Concepts, when we take over an asset, we have a report that we compile. It's we call it our community profile, and it's a 3-page questions, and it specifically comes from the condo docs and the state statute, so that any manager can walk on that property and know what is a quorum, how many units do they have, you know, what does it take to amend their docs. What is their percentage of late fee? And, I mean, that's a simple thing. It's again, it's an administrative issue.
Eric,
it's not a legal issue.
Eric, I have a question.
Yeah.
What if there's a dispute over the validity of one of the ballots?
If there's a dispute over the validity of one of the ballots, there's no question in my mind that this committee would take the position that determining whether or not a ballot is legal would certainly be considered the practice of law.
You know,
no two ways about it.
We always recommend to our associations to have the choice. Most of our camps at KW are very qualified to run an election. If the association feels that the association attorney should be there, then they should be there, and that should be working together as a partnership.
Sure.
And that's what should take place is, you know, one shouldn't be we're not saying better than the other. Let's work as a partnership together for the best interest of the association.
Right. Agreed.
Agreed.
And
I can tell you sometimes, though, Bruce, at a especially at an annual meeting, oftentimes, I will tell you, and this is going the other way a little bit, that legal decisions do, in fact, have to be made. Sometimes we'll get a ballot and the signature may be questionable, or we'll have to pull up recorded documents showing who specifically owns the property and whether or not it's a trust and whether or not the person who signed the ballot has the voting authority for that trust. And sometimes, yeah, you may cross that line into, you know, into the practice of law. But telling your client that 48 hours is needed for a meeting, that's certainly not crossing that fine line. That's silly stuff.
Yeah, certainly, Eric. I mean, you know, when you talk about ballots and elections, you know, you have some situations where you clearly need the assistance of an attorney. A good CAM that, you know, just to echo what Bruce is saying, a good CAM knows how to quantify that. But the 48 hours it's just ridiculous.
Well, let's do this. Let's take our final break of the hour, and when we get back, I'd like each of you to think about as to why you're suddenly coming under attack. What's the real motives, perhaps, of the committee? Darla certainly hit on some of them in her blog this week. We'll talk about that when we get back. We'll also take your calls, 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. And we'll talk about some things, though, that I would agree do, in fact, require a bar license. Okay? See you after the break.
Welcome back to the final segment of Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. Again, I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. We are taking your phone calls for our many guests today, and it's about CAMs. It's 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585, and we have on the phone our Darlis Walker from Condominium Concepts Management Company, also in the studio Raphael Aquino from Affinity Management Services, and also both from KW Management, Regan Maroc and Bruce Meja, Senior District Manager.
All right, guys, we're talking about the letter that the committee has written to the Florida Bar, trying to take away much of the activities that you guys do day in and day out. And let's look at what the committee says, actually, how they conclude their letter. They concluded by saying, simply put, many attorneys find they're devoting more and more resources responding to the types of issues noted in this request, and that would not have occurred but for what appears to be the continued rendering of legal advice by non-lawyers. I find that, quite frankly, funny. And, you know, as we all know, there's nothing in the current law that prevents associations from being self-managed. So if all of these tasks require a law license to perform, a law license, at least to me, would be required by every board member in a self-managed community who decides when, where, why, and how to post notices, to tell people how much they owe, sending warning letters, threatening suits, you know, et cetera. And every association, whether or not they have a licensed community association manager or not, would have their hands completely tied, and you'd really need to have an attorney on the payroll at all times to even perform ministerial tasks. I mean, I got to ask each of you, is that really the way we want community associations in South Florida to be headed, to have an attorney basically full-time on your staff? You know, throw it out there.
And I would say no. There's much more involvement for a CAM in the management of an asset, whether it's writing letters or looking at ledgers. There's also the human aspect of managing the people and the relationships and knowing how to combine the two of those. I just don't think it's as cut and dry. And again, my feeling is, are they really complaining that they've had too many billable hours? Give me a break.
Well, let me say this. I can tell you, I, for one, I don't find I'm devoting more and more resources correcting the errors of community association managers. Scott, I would think that you probably feel the same way.
It's about the same as it's always been.
Yeah, exactly. I'll tell you what I do find. I can certainly tell you that as a result of the foreclosure crisis over the last few years, a lot of attorneys that never, ever stepped foot into the community association law arena suddenly think that they're condo association and HOA association attorneys because they simply know how to prepare a lien, perhaps, and do the collection work, but really don't know anything else other than how to do that. And I do find myself spending resources dealing with the errors of those lawyers who actually only dabble in community association law, and lawyers who demand reprehensible fees and costs from unit owners who are really struggling to come current on past due assessments to the association. And at least to me, that's a much, much bigger problem than worrying about what CAMS are doing and whether or not it's the unlicensed practice of law. So let me ask it to you this way. You guys read the letter. What's, at least in your mind, what's the agenda behind it? What's the hidden agenda? There's always one. Darlis, let's start with you.
My feeling is they're actually trying to make an excuse that they think is going to be acceptable to increase their billable hours.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with Darlis on that as well. Keep in mind that also community association managers don't just take an initial course. We also take continuing education. At Affinity, we invest a lot of money and resources into our staff and into our managers. We're part of the Community Association Institute, so they receive additional certifications such as your AMS and your CMCA and also your PCAM. So we're always staying up to date and up to par with all the statutes and so forth and everything that's going on out there. So we feel that as a management company, we have the capabilities of doing a lot of the things. Now, there are a lot of items within this letter that we do feel an attorney should be on board.
But, Raphael, don't you think that with all of the training that we, and likewise we require from our professionals, that we have the common sense to know, that our CAMS have the common sense to know when we need to seek legal opinion and when it's something that we can handle?
Correct, most definitely. As Bruce mentioned earlier, I mean, we need to work as a team here. Whenever we need the attorney's assistance, they're only a phone call away, especially if it's Eric.
Right.
You know, Eric, as one of the largest companies in the state of Florida, what KW has been seeing is that this delinquency market is drying up. And with that drying up, attorneys are looking for different ways of generating fees. We understand that. I definitely agree with Darler that, we've got to be able to trust the people, and the associations have to be able to trust the people that work for them. There is a humanistic part of being a CAM manager on the property. The relationships, I'm sure the attorney is not going to, worry about Mrs. Brown if she's not feeling well. But, you know, there's that humanistic approach. So, you know, I see, you know, this all winding down, and hopefully there'll be a resolution, and hopefully we won't have that problem like we had 2 years ago of fighting this.
Well, let's put it this way. I mean, Raphael, you made the point that you guys are required to take continuing education courses and actually obviously pass a test to become licensed. So after reading the letter, and you can see just how desperately they want to limit almost everything that community association managers do day in and day out, you really have to ask, why would we make community association managers become licensed? Why would we make you study the Florida statutes on condo law and HOA law and pass a test regarding what those statutes say and the administrative code and, you know, et cetera, even if you pass it, you're not allowed to advise your client what those statutes say anyway? It seems to me it makes completely no sense. And certainly then, why make you guys take continuing education courses if virtually every single thing you do is going to be classified as the practice of law anyway? Makes no sense.
No sense.
I mean, you know, at all. But again, as we were saying earlier, though, there are certain things, and I probably should talk about it quickly in the 2-3 minutes we have left, that probably do, if, again, for those management companies that, again, want to work as a team, should work as a team, there are those things that, yeah, might be crossing the line into the practice of law. And just quickly, the committee also says preparation, reviewing, drafting, or substantial involvement in the preparation or execution of contracts, including construction contracts, management contracts, cable TV contracts. They take the position that if you can advise your client on the legalities of that contract or whether or not they should sign that contract, whether or not it's beneficial to them, that's practicing law. What do you guys think about that?
I'd have to agree with that, Eric. Yeah. There's a lot of associations, a lot of board members, I should say, that definitely want the management company to do it, keep costs low. But as a responsible management company and responsible manager, those are items that definitely need to be addressed by the association's attorney.
And this goes back to the team approach that I mentioned before. 100% we recommend to our managers and our associations that any contracts being signed should be reviewed by an attorney. That's their expertise. This is going to make sure that all legalities are taken care of, and the associations are definitely going to be free and clear and make sure that they benefit from those contracts with the help of the attorney.
At the end of the day, you have to think long term. And when you make decisions, you know, you want to make sure that whatever business you're doing it the right way. For instance, for us, when we're getting a new contract with a new association, we want that contract reviewed by an attorney so that if something happens down the road, we can say, hey, an attorney reviewed it. Please go speak to them. Although we hope nothing goes wrong. Sometimes when you're that big, it happens.
Hey, here's the bottom line. The truth is, you know, certainly you guys, in terms of everyone that's participated today, are smart enough to seek an experienced attorney's advice before performing much of the tasks that we actually spoke about during this last break. And it's certainly not a bad idea to get the attorney's advice. There's a big difference, though, in mandating this idea. And in times now where, as we all know, associations are struggling to survive financially, and really every nickel counts, at least in my opinion, now's not the time for the members of the bar who practice community association law to vote themselves a raise while at the same time turning licensed Florida Community Association managers into really nothing more than glorified bookkeepers. Not the way to go. But quickly, in the minute we got left, for the board members out there and the other community association managers who are listening, if you want to have your opinion heard by the Florida Bar in this regard, you can contact the Standing Committee on the Unauthorized Practice of Law of the Florida Bar, 651 East Jefferson Street, Tallahassee, Florida, 32399-2300. Again, Standing Committee on Unauthorized Practice of Law, Florida Bar, 651 East Jefferson Street, Tallahassee, Florida, 32399-2300. And Cam's out there, I can tell you, write the letter. Guys, thank you so much, all of you, for being our guests this week on the show. It is much appreciated. Really enjoyed having all of you.
Thank you, Eric.
Our pleasure.
Thank you, Eric. It's been
a pleasure. Everybody. Thanks for tuning in to another week of Condo Craze and HOAs. Same time, same channel next week. Have a good week.